we need to be making sure that we're incentivizing utilities to be doing the right things with investment. And that could mean deferring investment. It could mean installing storage. It could mean procuring load shedding services. That also requires different investment, of course, from a system operations perspective. It requires us to look at a different way of perhaps earning return.
Welcome to The Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 128, episode 128 of The Flux Capacitor. I've been chatting with the industry's business leaders, thought leaders, new market players, and stakeholders, the folks that have been pondering the future of how we create, move, trade, and use energy, and what the future changes will mean for electricity companies, regulators, society, and customers. I hope these conversations have given you, the listener, a sense of the conversations that are taking place in the sector. My guest on the podcast today is
Jana Mosley, President and CEO of Toronto Hydro.
Jana joined me for a chat about Toronto Hydro's role in ensuring electricity service to more than 3 million homes and businesses in Toronto. We talk about Hydro's plan to invest $5 billion over the next 5 years to modernize its grid, address rising electricity demand, and support a number of major city projects. Jana emphasizes the importance of safety, cost-effectiveness, and technological innovation in grid modernization. We also discuss the challenges of project development, the need for regulatory reforms, and the company's alignment with Toronto's net zero strategy. We close the conversation with Jana's book recommendation. Here is my conversation with Jana Mosley, recorded on Zoom in mid-November 2025. Jana, welcome to the podcast. Great to have an opportunity to chat with you.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this.
So why don't we start for the listener with a quick thumbnail sketch of Toronto Hydro for those that don't live in central Canada and don't have a familiarity with the company.
Happy to do that. So Toronto Hydro is a distribution company. We distribute power to over 3 million homes and businesses here in the city of Toronto, Canada's largest city. We have over $7 billion in assets, and we're really focused on, energizing our community today, but making sure that we're also building a brighter tomorrow here through building a more modern, capable, and resilient grid.
All right. And so what does that mean from a challenge perspective, building that brighter system for tomorrow? Sounds easy, piece of cake, right?
We're all struggling with that a little bit in this space these days, just based on the age of the assets in Canada and the renewal that's required, while also really forcing us to think differently about the grid, how we can maximize the use of the existing grid. Well, of course, trying to keep costs affordable for everybody. So, really, I'd say our most significant challenges and opportunities in front of us right now, always will continue to be safety. How do we make sure that we're doing all of this work and keeping our people and the public safe? Yeah. That needs to remain top of mind. And this is a high risk area. So we continue to work at our safety culture and how we think about that differently. Certainly, we're modernizing the grid and maximizing the investment that, customers already made. So we need to make sure we're getting everything out of the grid that exists today. Mm-hmm. As electricity demand in Ontario is set to rise by 75% over the next 20 years. And that really is driven by electrification and industrial growth and data centers and connecting. So here in Toronto, that means we're investing over $5 billion in Toronto's electricity grid over the next 5 years, making sure that we're ready for that future growth and electrification and supporting the city with some major developments like the Portlands area down on the water next to downtown Toronto and enabling the third line of transmission that's going to bring in generation into the city, and then supporting transit projects like the Ontario Line, and that's going to help get more cars off the road and make getting around this city easier for people. I'd say the third thing that we're focused on right now, like many others, is really just looking at technology. How do we make the grid smarter, stronger, more resilient? And how do we invest differently? Certainly, the frequency and severity of weather events is increasing, and that requires our grid to be more secure and stronger. By optimizing the grid and how it performs today, we're making sure that we're preparing for what's going to come at us out there down the road.
Okay. Why don't we maybe follow up on a couple of those.
Sure.
One of them is you talk a lot about the growth that you're going to be seeing, growing demand in Ontario, some major projects, third transmission line, and so on. How easy is it to actually get these projects moving forward? Is it a complicated process, just from a permitting and siting perspective? Because I mean, I do hear that from folks that are in the generation business, building large generation. But I my sense is even smaller projects, all right down to the distribution to the customer, that's not easy either, is it?
Certainly not. And it takes time. It takes time to develop these projects and plan them and look at all of the different alternatives, consult with stakeholders, look at all of the environmental impacts and the priorities of with different groups, understanding Indigenous lands and priorities there. So I think the number one complaint from a lot of people where they see a need and from customers is just how long the process still does take. And that's something that we're talking about federally and talking about really all over the world these days. And I think North America has certainly an opportunity to think about how do we hit the mark on satisfying everyone's needs or understanding them while also keeping these things moving more quickly. At the same time, we've got to make sure we're doing that regular. We've got to spend each dollar wisely. And make sure that customers are getting value for what they're paying for. So it continues to be an important balance. And we continue, certainly in Ontario, like other jurisdictions, to look at how we can streamline and simplify without skipping important steps.
Yeah, and I guess that's a critical point as well, right? Making sure that critical steps aren't skipped. So do we where do we need to adjust, or do we need to adjust? Is it just a case of we've got generally the right framework for legislation and regulation, but it's a question of being more efficient with it? Or do you think there's changes that we should be looking at bringing forward?
Well, I think we continuous improvement is just a fundamental of operational excellence, and in the utility space, that's what we're all about. So certainly there are some things that we can do differently. Making sure we don't have duplication, understanding and having clear priorities from policymakers that are going to achieve the broader goals of the country and the province and what taxpayers are looking for and expecting from their governments, and making sure that we are also not getting too lost in some of the unknowns. So this isn't something that the utility industry is strong at. We manage risk for a living, and rightfully so. We need to keep the lights on and provide people with the essential service of electricity. It's a life or death matter, let alone an economic driver and enabler. So I think that we can go from a place of yes, ensuring prudence, but also making sure that we are thinking ahead and enabling utilities to invest where they need to invest today so that we aren't left too far behind down the road. And that's very hard to catch up. So there's a bit of a shift, I do believe, that's required, and you're seeing policymakers and regulators start to have those discussions and look at non-traditional types of investment that utilities should be making for customers so that we can truly enable what this different future looks like for all of us.
I was intrigued by the use of the term lost on the unknowns. Can you unpack that a little bit? Because this
Sure.
is a sector that I mean it was built by engineers, and they know the
Yeah.
answer to everything. But of course, that's not the world that we live in, right?
Well, I mean, look how long we've debated net zero by when.
Yeah.
What I like now is that we seem to have moved past by the exact date, and just know we're moving from A to B. B might move, B might look slightly different. It might be B cubed by the time we get there, but there's the engineer in me making it into some sort of mathematic formula. But I think the less we debate the exact what it exactly looks like, and the more we spend our time moving us forward, the better off we'll be, because we just really can't predict the future. I mean, look what's happened in our country just over the last 18 months, and how through geopolitical priorities and economic requirements in our own country, we're seeing a shift in terms of some of the priorities that we've been talking about federally and some of those timelines. So we need to be nimble. We need to be comfortable not having all of the answers. Focus on the must-haves, the must-dos from a safety and reliability perspective. But we're gonna need to wade into some non-traditional type of ways of investing in our systems and using our grids so that we can unleash the full potential of all this investment.
Okay. Yeah, and I'd like to follow up on that. But first, one of the things that I ask folks who come on the podcast is about their journey. Always interested to get a sense of what people's journey has been. So same joke every podcast. Jana, when you were a kid on the playground, did you always dream of leading Toronto Hydro? What was your journey to this role?
Well, I wanted to be a lawyer and then a teacher, and then I landed on engineer, I think, thanks to some great influencers in my household and a physics and chemistry teacher in grade 12. And I've been so fortunate for what that has opened up for me through my career. I think, not unlike a lot of people in their early 20s, I landed in the utility space when I went to work for TransAlta after graduating from electrical engineering. And, I like to solve problems. I like to work with a team to achieve a greater good. And wow, do we ever have opportunities in our industry to continue to keep solving the next challenge and making a difference in ways that we get to see come to life when you're turning the lights on and off. So that's why I've stayed in this business. And they're just amazing people across the industry, and we share knowledge. We're supporting each other, and you know that better than anyone else, given the role that you play across Canada in this space. And I did know that I wanted to lead for whatever reason. Those are just some strengths that I had as a kid. Everything from organizing, circus events in my backyard, and parents coming to the door asking my mother, "Why does my kid need to bring $5 to your house?" And things like that. So I just always naturally got into those types of things. I just didn't know exactly where it would lead, and here we are, and I'm super grateful.
So, providing power to 3 million homes, the largest distribution company in Canada, the largest
Well, we can
distribution.
always debate that. My buddy Brian at Electra and I debate that from time to time, but I'm going to say yes, it is the one.
Okay. Yeah, it is, because there is a spectrum. You mentioned Electra, a company that's, in the same, sort of the same league as Toronto Hydro, but there's a spectrum in Ontario, and also in some of the other provinces where there's distribution only companies, from large
Absolutely.
companies to small companies. So you're leading one of the largest. Are there advantages to that scope and scale that a smaller company in Ontario wouldn't have? And I imagine there's also further complications as well. So there kind of be pluses and minuses. But what does that look like from a scale
Yeah, well,
perspective?
first I'd clarify when I talk largest. I should have mentioned largest urban, right? And I would say one of the biggest differences between distribution companies is urban versus rural. Those are very, very different challenges. And then you throw in the city of Toronto, old infrastructure, Not all of it's underground. Like, if you're down in New York City, I was just down meeting with Tim, Con Edison's CEO, and just comparing notes a couple weeks ago. And we have some real challenges here in the city. And if you want to get into upgrade infrastructure or connect new buildings, you are really disrupting people in the city, businesses, people trying to move around and drive around this city. So it requires a different level of planning and coordination, and we still have opportunity there to do that better. And that's a big focus of ours right now in working with the City of Toronto. And just that congestion and tight space, both from a physical perspective above ground, but then also what's happening below ground or in people's backyards. And you just have to drive around the city to see that.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of greenfield happening in my service territory, that's for sure.
Right. But a lot of build up, right? I mean, that's
Absolutely.
every time
Yeah,
anybody
we're
visits
spending
Toronto.
almost 900 million a year right now in capital, just meeting the growth and asset renewal that's required here in the city.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, non-traditional types of investments and allowing for non-traditional types of investments. What would that look like? What does that mean?
Yeah, so certainly, the things that we've seen change are, of course, the investment in technology that utilities are required to make. Technology certainly unlocks innovation, but it drives up operational costs. Depending on how the financial treatment, right? You're moving from spending capital to operating with cloud services and cybersecurity. And so, well, eventually you're going to get those operational efficiencies and cost savings in the near term. There's quite a bubble there. And so, looking at how do you treat that from a finance and from a regulatory perspective, and making sure that utilities are able to make those important investments that customers benefit from, is really, really important. So I do think we need to continue to think differently about that in our regulatory frameworks and our revenue requirements. And then certainly when you look at distribution systems in particular, and if we want to maximize two-way power flow in our grid, we need to be making sure that we're incentivizing utilities to be doing the right things with investment. And that could mean deferring investment. It could mean installing storage. It could mean procuring load shedding services. And so we need to be making sure that we're doing that. And so that also requires different investment, of course, from a system operations perspective. But it requires us to look at a different way of perhaps earning return.
And is that something that is an active conversation right now?
Yeah, I'm pleased to say that I think, the Ontario Energy Board, and I certainly saw this in Alberta with the Alberta Utilities Commission. They're aware of this. They're open to the conversation. They have been supporting utilities who've been piloting different types of investment. And they're proceeding with caution, probably not as fast as most utilities would like. But I think with each rate case that goes in and each utility learning from each other, we're starting to make some progress around what can we really do here. And we don't need to just look within Canada. There are areas in the United States that have done this well. New York is one of them. And certainly in the UK and Australia, there's some great lessons learned there. But that's how we're really going to unlock the full potential of the grid. And our utility companies know this grid better than anyone else. And I think we just need to make sure we unleash them to be able to do what they really can only do for customers.
Yeah. So it sounds as though this would be achievable in the current regulatory construct, but that this is going to require, I guess, a kind of an iterative process in terms of rulings and decisions. But it isn't something where we've got to, we've got to introduce legislation and change how we regulate.
It depends. It would depend what jurisdiction you're in.
Okay.
I think a policymaker's job is to provide that clear policy direction to independent system operators and regulators. And we're having that conversation certainly here in Ontario, right? So we do still need to bring regulators along. We need to continue working on building trust between utilities and regulators. so that we can unlock, proper investment and in technology and ways of working. And I think what's really important is we do need to move past talking about just electricity costs. And we need to talk about the total energy wallet. As technology changes, as consumer behavior changes, we are going to see a shift in how people use electricity, and I expect the cost of electricity will go up as a result of, what you're spending on electricity will be higher. But what I expect will also happen is perhaps the what you're spending on natural gas will be down. And so we need to start educating people around that total energy wallet and thinking about costs and affordability through that lens, not just through a rate one rate case at a time and looking at, making sure that we don't see any of the electricity rates go up, because I just think that's not practical for what's ahead of all of us.
Yeah, so that sounds like a challenge that is greater than Toronto Hydro.
Correct. Yeah.
And it sounds like it's greater than, simply the utilities. Who's going to need to be part of this
Well,
conversation?
I think it's a very active conversation, in any jurisdiction right now. Even Electricity Canada, I would say, has been part of understanding that and through its various committees, been pooling the minds across the country at all of the different utilities together. I do think we have an opportunity through Electricity Canada and other advocacy groups to bridge the gap through CANFOOT and work with the regulators to better understand this. And then, and talk to our policymakers about how this works. This is what they do day in and day out. And so just helping them understand it and what problems are we solving, trying to solve together and look at practical ways to do that. I'm really encouraged here in Ontario. We are seeing some great alignment all the way up to, the top through the Premier's office and Minister Lecce, the Minister of Energy and Mines. And we're having a conversation. Conversation not just about supply, not just about transmission, but we're now having conversation about distribution utilities as well, and looking at how do we make sure that distribution companies are able to finance the incredible CapEx programs that they're going to have down the line as we're working to get new generation from supply all the way to households and businesses. So this is an active conversation. I think we've got the right people in the ta at the table, and we've got some common goals. So I'm quite encouraged by that.
Yeah, and one of the issues that I think has been part of almost every conversation you and I have had since you took on this role at Toronto Hydro is about customers and affordability, because that's got to be central to this conversation, right?
Absolutely. It is everywhere. There's cost pressures in every household
Yeah.
with everything that has been going on, even since COVID. So, that hasn't gone away. And as utilities, we need to be thoughtful about that and be using our expertise to think about how do we plan and stage this appropriately. But we also need to make sure we don't collectively shy away from doing the things that need to be done and pushing this problem down the road.
Right. You mentioned earlier about growing demand, and the need to meet some of this demand through a variety of projects. You mentioned data centers. So are data centers, and I think I mentioned to you offline that I was at Enwave a couple of days ago, and they were showing us some of their interesting technology where they're recovering heat from buildings, and they talked about recovering heat from data centers. So are data centers now becoming a significant part of Toronto Hydro's business?
So interestingly enough, when you're in the city of Toronto, you wouldn't think that there's a large footprint where you could see data centers starting to pop up, but they certainly are.
Yeah.
So we have a few of them today with substantial load, and certainly we have several others that are in talking with us right now about their plans. So there's a lot of empty space too that can be taken advantage of, where you have some sort of interconnection to the grid already. And so we're starting to see those discussions happening. So yeah, very much about our longer term load growth and the need for increased capital investment.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
I think in many ways that can be a good thing, because You can socialize, the costs around, how we're paying for the grid through the more customers you have connected to the grid, the more you can spread out the need, how we pay for that grid. So it can be part of the solution in terms of keeping costs affordable when you look at some of these connecting some of these larger loads to your system.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Okay. And then one of the other challenges you mentioned was to be able to meet some of these future challenges. You've got a third transmission line. So how's that going to happen?
Yeah,
Just
it's
snap your
exciting. We've been
fingers
talking
and
about this one for a while. The Independent Electric System Operator published their plan at the end of October after an extensive consultation period that I'm really pleased to say Toronto Hydro played a big role in. And they did recommend to bring in a third line of supply and to do that directly from where some of the new nuclear development is happening out east at Darlington, and bring that in actually as a submersed cable, a big cable, all the way into that undeveloped Portlands area east of downtown Toronto. So, I think that the good news about that is, you're really minimizing the impact to landowners, in terms of, reconductoring or if you needed to widen right of way. Now that said, I think there are some other great alternatives there that would have minimal impacts to landowners anyways because of existing right of way that exists. But you know what? We're going to need a fourth line. So that will come in due course anyways. What's nice here is, with the city's plans to develop that area, we get to look at that all at once. And do it right and get moving on that. So we're excited to partner on that project and see that we're going to indeed be able to get new supply, additional supply in to serve our customers, because that's certainly always on my mind as we build this new generation. That's excellent, but we've got to get it to homes and businesses within our service territory. And that is not easy in a congested city like Toronto.
And you mentioned this Portlands development. Just for people who aren't familiar with it, it's like adding another small city, right? I mean, it's going to be
Absolutely.
pretty.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Enwave. They're also looking at, what role can district heating and cooling play in that development down there. And that's a really great opportunity for us to, as Toronto Hydro, to partner with Carlisle and his team and the city in planning out, the ultimate infrastructure development there to as we, as we continue to invest in the growth in the city. So it's exciting to see that all come together. It's always hard to ask a city to save land for later. So, while we could have reserved space for an eventual line coming in through the water, in some ways it's good to move forward with it now and make sure that we're able to do it right.
And then net zero, you talked about net zero earlier and different, depending upon where you are, you've got a different target. As a distribution company. Does Toronto Hydro itself have a net zero target for the company? The kind of sort of separate and independent of for what, what the province is doing or what the city is doing. Do you have targets at Toronto Hydro?
So we are our targets are aligned with our shareholder. So there's four main priorities right now of our shareholder. And I should mention our sole shareholder is the City of Toronto. We're focused on certainly making sure that they get a stable, predictable return on investment, advancing their net zero strategy, and they have a very clear laid out transform TO plan. And our role is to really support them through enabling emission reductions of buildings and vehicles through our investment in infrastructure and certainly reducing our own emissions through our own fleet electrification and looking at our own building emissions. And we're well on track to hit our goals there. The third shareholder priority is to increase access to transit. And then, of course, affordable and available housing in what is a growing city. So yes, we certainly are focused on net zero. We also talk a lot about how do we support that overall, it's through enabling electrification. And we do that, through investing in our grid. That is the way we contribute to decarbonization and climate action. We're the backbone for supporting that. And so we need to be prepared to electrify new homes and buildings and transit at a rapid space, at a rapid pace. I'd say when I look out into the future, there's really three key things that we're doing that, are and going to continue to lean in that are different than perhaps what we've been doing in the past, which was more of, I would say, that an order taker, or, if you bring it to me, I will figure out how to connect you. We're really moving to more of that proactive accelerator of electrification and expanding beyond just educating and advising customers around energy efficiency goals to really removing barriers and incentivizing electrification across the city. We are proactively investing, of course, in those core system upgrades that are going to enable the energy transition. And then we're really looking at how do we advance what we refer to in our industry as the DSO operating model, which is the distribution system operations of our business. And really, this is about, how do we make sure that we can reduce, the need for additional supply wherever possible that saves customers money, by how we're operating the grid. And increasing that system flexibility.
So, Janet, the last question, and I ask everybody the same last question, and that is for a book recommendation. We assemble them all onto our book, our Flux Capacitor book club. So our reading list today will have an additional book based upon your recommendation. So what book are you going to put on our reading list today?
This is a great question. I am a bit of an addict of leadership and culture books, but I thought I'd go back to basics for you. A book that I read in my early 20s, and it was called Strengths Finder 2.0 by Tom Rath. There's been many versions of it since, so I don't know if it's still 2.0, but this is really based on Clifton Strengths Finder. Gallup now, I think, is the has the rights to his philosophy. And it really is all about understanding what your top strengths are and figuring out how to amplify those. And I found when you just work with people and for yourself and focusing on your strengths, you really start to unleash the potential in people and in your organization. So it's a great read. Get your partner or friends to do the assessment too. You have some great debate. Some people wonder how my partner and I are able to live in the same house based on our top five strengths, but that's a story for another day, Francis. But it's been really helpful for me. And then I'd say later in career, looking at what happens when you're overusing your strengths and how does that end up playing out and looking and so looking like, and so how can you adjust that as well? So that's what I'd offer to you and your listeners, and I hope people enjoy it as much as I have.
All right. So Strengths Finder 2.0. And this is Tom Rath. So Strengths Finder 2.0 with by Tom Rath. A great addition.
You got it.
Terrific. Appreciate that. We will add it to our reading list. And with that, Janet, thank you very much for taking the time to chat, to join the podcast, and to give us some insight into what's happening at Toronto Hydro. Really appreciate it.
It's very exciting times ahead. I'm happy to be here. I feel very fortunate to be leading in this very exciting time with this great group of people.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen and let me know what you think of the Flux Capacitor. You can find me on Instagram as the Brad Bradley, on LinkedIn, and through our website at electricity.ca. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 128. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Jana's recommendation, Strengths Finder 2.0 by Tom Rath. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.